All right. Everybody finished with their s'mores? Tell me you didn't leave those fish we caught in my tent, Charlie. Now bring some more wood for the fire. Come on, gather around. Don't play up in the fire, Malik. You're sitting there behind on the chair. Now get ready, because Uncle Glenn's got some scary stories. Yeah, they really happen. That's why they're scary. Say what? You want me to say it in my radio voice? Well, how about this?
Tonight, in the woods, on Snap Judgment, from PRX to NPR, we proudly present Campfire Tales.
Y'all scared, ain't you? Somebody get the baby, please.
Amazing stories of scary stuff that happened to other people. Don't wander off the path. Don't get too close to the flame. Because you're listening to Snap Judgment. I do have some stories I need to tell y'all. This first one is from a friend of mine. It was on a camping trip not unlike the one y'all on right now. But then, stuff started going down.
It is called Camp Hilal. It is an Islamic camp, strictly for Muslims. I'm not sure where exactly in Michigan it is, what city, but it is pretty much in the middle of nowhere. Just woods everywhere. I mean, Islam generally supports like oneness with nature. One of the primary activities we generally focused on was lectures from the sheikh, and a sheikh is in Islam, basically what a priest is in Christianity. It wasn't necessarily his main topic of discussion, but he would end the lectures off, I don't want to say warning us, but he said there's been multiple like weird things, I guess, going on in the campsite. And he brought up the topic of jinn. He told us jinn are part of a whole another dimension that we're not able to access. They're generally known to inhabit like secluded areas, you know, separate from like civilization or humans. Like right when it hits sunset, I guess, that's when it's basically their time. They come out and he told us, don't like even think about going into the wooded areas by yourself, because when you show some sort of extreme fear, high levels of vulnerability become like evident towards these jinn. So it's about like 9:30 at night, and you know, we're all coming back to our cabin, our counselors are with us. We're getting ready for bed at this point, you know, we're all talking, just, the door to our cabin, the front door, the entrance, starts opening and closing continuously for like 3 minutes, and, I mean, it's basically impossible for the wind to blow it in. This door, every time it closes, you know, there's a latch. I know this one kid, I look at him, and his face is just white. He's just like sweating very intensely. And he starts screaming like, what the hell is going on? What the hell is going on? He was crying, man. Like, and everybody's telling him to calm down. So you need to relax yourself. Like, this is gonna stop in a second. I swear I get shivers telling you this, man. He's out of his bed. He's on his knees, leaning towards the ground, and dude, just like that, man, his head just starts swinging back and forth. On his knees, the back of his head would touch the ground, he'd lean forward, go back, back of his head would touch the ground again, and he did this repetitively for about like 10 seconds. When this is happening, while he's going back and forth, he starts vomiting, just viciously, man. it was disgusting. I've never seen vomiting like at such a rapid rate. It seemed ridiculously excruciating. Our counselor gets the camp doctor, and they grab this kid. They put him onto the bed, and he starts going crazy. And this is when I realized, like, all right, there is something wrong with this kid. I think he's freaking possessed. He's just tossing them off of him, man. Like, swinging with his fingers, clawing them. They're trying to contain him by basically putting, like, extreme pressure on his forehead. He's screaming, Anablis, Anablis, which means, I am the devil. Iblis in Islam is considered the devil, you know, that is the name of the devil. He wasn't gagging, he was moaning, like it was a moan of pain, echoing, you know, just like, Anablis. It was a very dark, dark sort of tone. And I mean, I know this all seems very superstitious, and we all thought, okay, maybe he's legit having a panic attack. But yet the atmosphere of the cabin itself was so thick and dark and just, and very murky that we knew, man, that this kid had a jinn inside of him. He's clawing at them, he's screaming, Anablis, Anablis. So the counselor, you know, he leaves Rani and us there and he goes and gets the sheikh, okay, the sheikh of the camp. Now the sheikh bolts in. This is about 2 minutes later, you know, after he left. He bolts in to the cabin and instantly, dude, no further explanation was required. He saw what was going on and he knew right away. And in this situation, it's known in our religion that there's a specific verse you have to recite. It is a verse called Ayat al-Kursi. Ayat al-Kursi. From this one chapter in the Quran, which is our holy book. This sheikh, you know, he starts reciting Ayat al-Kursi. He's reading. I'm like, dude, what? This is supposed to drive the spirit out of the human body, but yet he's still going crazy, screaming anabris. So after about like 5 minutes of reciting, man, he starts vomiting again. Not as he was before, you know? It's kind of like normal vomit, you know? After he stops vomiting, dude, he lets out this like demon-like screech. It was so deep and powerful. It was unlike anything I've ever heard. So he lets out this screech and it just became silent, man. Just silence. As weird as this sounds, man, like instantly, I swear to God, the air just, you can feel it. It started to clear up. They rush him to the hospital. The sheikh hops in with him, the counselor, and the doctor. They all go with. I'm sitting there, dude. I'm not gonna lie. I'm bawling. I'm just like crying my ass off. When they got back, they had told us the doctors were very confused if he was having like a panic attack or an anxiety attack. His blood pressure and his heart rate would be through the roof. But this kid, he had a heartbeat that was pretty much unnoticeable. He left the hospital probably 2 or 3 days later. I've seen him one time since that incident. And I'll tell you one thing, man. He will never be the same. Ever. Nowhere near the kid he used to be. He's very introspective. But to the point where he doesn't say anything. And when he does say anything, it's kind of something irrelevant. Definitely in his own world. I mean, honestly, man, I believe that when you become possessed, you know, I told you that the humans and the jinn dimension, they can contact us, but we can't contact them. But this kid literally has opened up this dimension in his own way. Like, and, you know, I've never asked him to elaborate on this because, honestly, man, I don't want to hear any more about it. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I've developed some sort of phobia towards this whole topic of jinn. The next year, they had changed the campsite, you know, they decided to never go back there. You know, they've never gone back since, man.
Yep, that's how it happened. Believe it.
Thank you so much, Keith, for telling your story to Anthony Bionis. Y'all remember Auntie Rita, right? Auntie Rita, well, one day, she went off gallivanting. You know how she is. Won't listen to anybody. When she came back, she had a story.
So at the time of this story, I'm a senior in college, and I have been working my little booty off for 4 years. I was very sleep deprived, and my adrenals were probably completely spent. So one morning, I have this complete meltdown. In hysterics, I go over to my guidance counselor, the school advisor, and I announce that I am dropping out of school. And she pulls up my student records. She tells me, Rita, just listen, you only have one class left to take to graduate. In global perspectives, you can just go and take a trip and do this independent study, and all you have to do is keep a journal. So I start doing research, and I find out about this little town on the tip of Baja called Todos Santos, in this desert oasis a mile off the Pacific Ocean, overlooking all these old sugarcane valleys. And I get in touch with this property manager in this little town, and she speaks perfect English, and it turns out that she's like an expat. I tell her that I want the cheapest rental possible, and she gives me two choices. The first one is this cinder block, concrete, one-room little place, like 5 miles outside of town. For the same price is this 10-room historic hacienda in the middle of town. This property manager explains to me that I'm coming in the off-season, and so, you know, that's why the price is so great. I book a plane ticket. A week later, I get this little old skeleton key in the mail and a hand-drawn map of the town. And I finally arrive in this little village, ask some directions, and really proud of myself because it's the first time that I've really ever used my Spanish in a real situation. Izquierda, derecha. So I walk up this road and I find the house and I hear this piano music and it sounds like it's coming from inside the house. By the time I finally get the door open, the piano music has stopped. So I get in the house. There's like these old candelabras hanging from the vigas, and there's these bookshelves with these leather-bound books. And it's just room after room, and I find this little note on the kitchen counter, and it's from the property manager, and she's just like, welcome, you know, this is how you get to a little store, and here's a good place to go for tacos, and blah, 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 blah. And you'll need to buy some matches or some lighters for the stove, because the gas stove, you had to ignite it with something. So I walk out that night. There's these packs of little kids everywhere playing soccer in the streets, and it's just all very lively. And I buy coffee for the morning, and I buy this twin pack of these long reach lighters. So I go back to my new house, and I make a cup of tea, and I plug this fan in and like direct it straight onto the bed, because it's 11 o'clock at night, still like 95 to 100 degrees. And then a couple minutes later, I realize that I can still hear the fan going. But the breeze is not blowing on me. I look up, the base of the fan has been turned 90 degrees to face the wall. And I'm like, what? How did that happen? And then instantly, I'm just overcome with sleep. Can't hold my eyes open anymore. It's like all I can do to flip the light off and I just fall asleep. At about 4 in the morning, I guess, when it's still really, really dark, I am just thrown awake. And I start to hear this click, click, click. It sounds like one of those lighters. When I wake up in the morning, I go to make a cup of coffee, and that lighter, that new lighter that I just bought, won't spark. I hold it up to my ear and I shake it. It's empty. Go on with my day. And I have a very, very lovely day. I wander around the town and I go to take a stroll into the ocean and I meet these local surfers and they're my age and they're really laid back. Heriberto and the other one is Aris and they speak perfect English. can tell these guys are maybe going to be like my new friends. Heriberto, he asks me, where are you staying? You know, these guys seem cool, but I'm not stupid. I'm a little hesitant to give up that information so easily, but they seem harmless. And so I say like, oh yeah, you know, this hacienda right in town, El Torreon. And it's like, the light is weird because it's about sunset, but I swear to God, it looks as though Heriberto goes completely white. And he looks over at Aris, and they just immediately start speaking rapid-fire Spanish to the point where I cannot understand a single word that they're saying. And this goes on for a couple minutes. And then they just look back at me, and they're like, do you want to come with us to get some dinner? I'm like, oh, okay. Grab some tacos and some tequila and a few beers. They drop me off, and when I'm getting out of the car, they say, good night and good luck. So I'm kind of laughing to myself, and I get to the door, and I hear this piano music again. And when I open the door, the music just gets louder. The living room is right when you walk in, and like, there's the piano, and the keys are just fully going. This is not a player piano. And there's no little reel anywhere inside of this piano. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what the hell is going on here. And I know that I've had a couple drinks, but this is weird. Within about 30 seconds, the piano stopped playing. The keys stopped moving. And I just went into the bedroom, turned the fan on, started reading. In about 10 minutes, the fan wasn't blowing on me anymore. I looked over, and sure enough, the base of the fan had been turned 90 degrees, and I was exhausted. Flipped the light off, and I fell asleep. Well, this night, at about 4 in the morning, my eyelids were thrown open, and I felt this presence forcing itself into my body. And I heard right next to my head once again that click, click, click of that freaking lighter. It was as though somebody was coming and like sitting on top of me. A physical weight, and it's very, very hot. It started at my feet, and it was slowly moving up through my ankles and then to my calves and then to my knees, kind of taking over. And I didn't know what was going to happen if it got to my heart. I thought that's like where my soul was. I wouldn't call myself a religious person, even at that point in time, but I had been raised Catholic. And so all I knew to do, I just got on my knees and I started saying, I renounce you in the name of Jesus Christ. I renounce you in the name of Jesus Christ. I was rocking back and forth. I kept like throwing up just on the floor right next to me. I want to laugh at myself, and at the same time, I'm totally crying because it was really real and it was very, very scary. Finally, there's like this little ribbon of light at the horizon line that I can see through the shutters, and I'm completely exhausted because I feel like I've just fought a battle or something, and there was a pounding on the door, so I was totally freaked out, and it was Heriberto, my new surfer buddy from the night before, and I just grabbed him and hugged him and held him to my chest. And I said, I'm so glad you're here. I don't know if that was what he was expecting, but he just looked at me. He said, yeah, I thought I would come check on you. I kind of told him what happened, and he broke the news to me that the house had been the mayor's home. The mayor's wife was this great musician, this pianist who had toured the world, and she died when she was 21 years old, exactly my age, in that home. In childbirth, and she had haunted the place ever since, and especially, she definitely messed with females. She was very notorious with all the locals. So I moved out and I took the little cement cinder block shack in the dusty cactus 5 miles from town, and I lived a little more humbly, and I still had an incredibly fabulous last semester of college.
Did you hear that? I want all y'all to understand, all right? All of y'all. If you go up in the house and some ghostie starts playing on the piano, you get out lickety-split. You hear me? It's a bunch of craziness. Now, don't fidget too much. I'm gonna go get a little something to put in this flask. I'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Cause Snap Judgment, Campfire Tales, just got started. Stay put. All right, now, tonight in front of the campfire, we're going to have our own special Snap Judgment. Isn't that right? I want you all to come back around here. Put the stick in the fire, Jamal. Now, you kids ain't going to remember. I'm going to tell you this anyway. All right? If something ever looks too good to be true, run away.
The funny thing about it is when I walked in the door the first time, there was a kind of a pretty big wooden picture frame with all these little pictures in it. It was the only thing in the house. And I took it down and looked at it, and it was a picture of the house in the neighborhood with no other houses around it, just redwoods. So it obviously was really old. And in also other pictures, there was various old family photos. The first weird thing was my friend had spent the night, she was sleeping on my floor and woke me up and said she had seen a girl standing in the doorway of my room. She was in a blue dress and she was about 10 and had blonde hair. That was really creepy. Maybe a week later, I woke up from a nap and I saw a figure standing in that doorway, a girl. And so then I was hanging out with someone, and of course I was like, let's do a Ouija board. And I tried to talk to this girl. I was like, are you here? What's going on? And it kept going to the same things on the board. Like, I need light. I need air. I got the impression that this girl had been locked away or something. The other weird thing that happened was my friend came over. He was like, oh, what did you see that? And I was like, what? And he's like, I swear I saw just a little boy around the side of your house. Do you have any neighbors with kids? And I was like, no. He saw it twice, inside and then running around the outside of the house. So then I started to get nervous. My friend said that he had a psychic friend who is a clairvoyant, I guess, someone who reads spaces, who didn't really even need to know much about the house. I told him nothing. This is all a stranger who knew nothing. And he told me crazy things. He said there was 3 ghosts in my house. He said there was a little girl who was lonely and who probably had been ill in her life. He's like, I see her needing space and air, everything that I'd seen on the Ouija board. And he's like, and the other thing I see is a little boy who's sort of more mischievous, but not malicious. And he's like, now the last ghost I see is more malicious. And he was like, that's not great. I was like, just tell me, I need to know what's in my house. He said, there's a man in his younger adult years. This guy should be wearing an old-fashioned man's suit and a hat, who is sort of a pervert ghost who will watch women sleep, but he's like particularly attracted to women. And I was like, whoa, this is gonna do it. But I was really scared. So I figured I should go home and tell my housemates what I'd uncovered. And I had sort of a house meeting with people who were living there. I didn't want to like plant the seeds in their mind. I wanted to check in with them if anyone had seen anything. And so one of my housemates, who I barely knew, said, I just thought it was a dream, but I woke up and there was a face in a hat staring at me. And I was like, what kind of a hat? And she's like, I can't explain it. And it was then that I thought, wait a minute, we have that picture. And I grabbed the picture off the wall, and was when I really looked at the picture and realized that all the ghosts that I'd heard of were all in the pictures. every single one. Almost like the ghost came out of the picture. A little girl with polio crutches and the little boy. There's other pictures of like a young man in a bowler hat. I said, did it look like this guy? And she started crying. She was like, oh my God, that's exactly what it looked like. I told them the truth. I told them everything. And that was enough. I got myself out of there and then I immediately found another place to live. It was too much.
And she never went back to the house again. See? The moral of the story is always listen to your uncle. Now, the third lesson for today's campfire tales is that whenever you move to a new place, first, be sure it's not occupied. Now, Auntie Rita, she met our friend Leah. And Leah, she's got a story about how she had to learn things the hard way.
My name is Leah, and I'd always had a thing for old houses. I was 22 and bulletproof at the time, and so, long story short, I ended up buying my first house. This one, it was a 6,000 square foot brick Victorian. It looked so miserable. It was literally like a time warp walking back into that house. Everything was as you might have found it in 1901, except for the fact that it was falling to pieces. And it had a very distinctly empty feeling throughout the majority of the house, except in what was the servants' quarters. On my very first tour of the house, once I walked into the servants' quarters, there was no question in my mind that there was somebody right around the corner in that room. And so, while still standing outside the room, I just said that I wasn't there to cause problems and I didn't want them to run away, but that I would appreciate not being frightened out of my skin, thank you very much, and please do not let me see you because that's what freaks me out. I just kind of got a sense of peace that was like a breath of air that said, oh, okay. I really felt like it wanted to take care of the house, and that's why it had stuck around. We started calling it a she, and she was always amazingly considerate. Very early on, my family members started having occurrences. At night, they would hear slippered footsteps, and the door would open to their bedroom, and somebody literally asked them if they had enough blankets, or are you warm enough? And you would hear the skirts rustling. And these doors, there was no way to just push a door open. You had to turn the handle all the way, and then you had to push it open. They had a very distinct catch to them. And so on innumerable occasions, there were people that asked, you know, did you come into my room last night? And it was always, no, it wasn't me. I literally can't pawn it off on being my own imagination. Now, when we would hear her on the stairwell that was the servants' quarters stairwell, we would hear shoes, you know, the clicking. But if she was on the main staircase, it was a softer footfall. And I discovered that servants were required to wear soft slippers on the main stairs so as not to scratch the finer woods. I started to have more and more experiences with her in the kitchen. I've always enjoyed cooking, but I was confronted by a situation in that kitchen because I had about a 150-year-old wood cook stove. And it just confounded me, and I was just really bent on the idea of learning how to use it, because my great-grandmother had, so why couldn't I? And so I got it into my head to bake a pie one day, and I tried to get the temperature up on the oven part to be sufficient to be able to make a pie, and no matter how much wood I stuffed into the box, I couldn't get the temperature to come up. And that's when I first heard the sound that I came to really associate with the spirit that we later came to call Annabelle. She would tisk and hiss, sort of like a clucking old mother. It would sound something like so she would tisk and sigh when she was just completely aggravated with your obvious ignorance. And so I heard the tisk and the sigh, and I was so frustrated with the stove at the time, I just didn't really care. And so I kind of stomped my foot and said, what? If you've got something to say, say it. And I very distinctly heard, pull that lever. And I stomped my foot again and I said, no, I'm not going to pull that lever. I tried that a minute ago and it just killed the fire completely. And so I hear again and just pull the lever. So figuring, fine, I'll fill the room with smoke just to prove you wrong. I went ahead and pulled the lever and the temperature shot straight up. Apparently I hadn't pulled it at the proper time. And then she proceeded to teach me how to make a proper pie crust. Those are the kind of things that happened in my kitchen on a fairly regular basis. I think she was utterly astounded that I had ever found anybody to marry me because I was obviously completely incompetent as a woman. But she took me under her wing to a degree and helped me fill those areas where I was so obviously weak. Of course, I wanted to know as much about the history of the house as I could. We all found some documents, literally, underneath the floorboards in the attic that indicated that had been built by the man who owned the brick factory in town, and he had alcohol problems and died fairly young. The mother also had passed away fairly young. He had all but bankrupted the family before he passed, and now with the mother being gone, the girls and apparently their nanny, they had the house over their heads but no way to support it. We found out that they were running a car polishing business. And there was two sets of leather-bound ledgers with identical dates but different charges for each line item. Mr. So-and-so had such-and-such done for 50 cents, and on the other books, the same Mr. So-and-so had such-and-such done for $5. And rumor had it, it was a rather notorious cat house for that same time period. So left to their own devices, and that was about the only way they could make a living. And so it became part of our story that maybe she had been the nanny when they were young and then became the madam after the fact. One of the very last rooms that we renovated was the stairwell going up to the servants' quarters. There was wallpaper in that stairwell that had an odd brown mark every other step at about shoulder height. If a person was walking up the stairs with some sort of wound on their shoulder and leaning against the stair every time that footfall hit, they would leave a smudge on the wall there, and that's exactly what it looked like. Every mark was the same as the next with a sort of streakiness. You had asked if I had ever been afraid around her. One occasion, and it was literally one occasion out of the 9.5 years that I was there. I rounded the corner leaving the kitchen and encountered what I had come to be familiar with as her presence. But behind that presence, I felt something completely different, and it was dark and it was not pleasant. And it was the first time she had ever addressed me without that sort of tisk, sigh, here's what you're doing wrong kind of thing. She said, turn around and get out of here. It's not right. And so I hightailed it out of there up to her room. You know, I closed the door behind me, and there was no way that I was coming out of that room until I got the all clear from her. And that didn't come till the next morning. I got the distinct gut impression that it had something to do with whatever had caused those marks on that wall. As the renovations on the house were becoming more and more complete, and as it started to look like the home that she remembered it being, her presence became more and more infrequent. She just didn't feel the need to come around quite as much anymore, and besides, I'd learned how to use the stove.
Hey, kids, you know that pie? That pie you're eating right now? It was made from Annabelle's secret recipe. That one right there. You can find it yourself right now at snapjudgment.org. And you know, it wouldn't have happened without Lainey Amber and Estelle Marcheson going to some very scary places. Now, I'm going to get up, go to the little boy's room. When I get back, I'm going to tell y'all the story of the Exorcist. Be afraid. Be scared. For real. When Snap Judgment, Campfire Tales continues. Don't go anywhere.
Support for Snap Judgment comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
All right. Welcome back. I'm doing a special Uncle Glenn Snap Judgment Campfire Tales. All right. It's from NPR and PRX. I said it. And I've got a story for y'all that comes straight from the darkness. See, there's this guy I knew. His name was Alan, and he worked with mental patients in the Midwest. And he started working in a wing with the healthiest people. But Alan wanted to be where the action was. He actually asked to be transferred to the acute ward, which housed some of the most psychotic people in the region. And the thing is, Alan's request was approved.
We had a signal that would be piped throughout the building if somebody became violent or suicidal or whatever. It was called Code Red, and then it would be followed by a room number or an area. Code Red, cafeteria, Code Red, lobby. What you were told in orientation was drop whatever you were doing and go to that spot as fast as you could. You really developed situational awareness. You always knew who was behind you and what patients were where and where your friend was. When you went into rooms, you were aware where was the space that somebody could be hiding with anything to club you over the head when you walked in. It was very common for patients to barricade themselves in a room, pick up a chair, and start smashing at the windows. We had ways to get into the room, almost tactical squad-like, and overcome this person.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
It was around 19—I don't remember. When did the movie Exorcist come out? It was in the early 70s. There was just this spate of admissions of people who were convinced that they were possessed by the devil. You know, that they were Linda Blair. They were now possessed. And it was like, damn that movie. When will that movie be out of the theaters? They were almost always young people, and they were going to a late night showing of The Exorcist, and they all dropped acid. It was like, okay, how stupid do you have to be that you would do acid and go see The Exorcist? If somebody came in and thought they were possessed, they got stronger.
Code Red, room 312. Code Red, room 312.
I remember admitting a relatively young woman, a really small woman, as I recall. It was just a titanic battle. Eyes just wild, cursing in tongues, projectile vomiting, sores that would appear almost before your eyes. We had leather straps and locks. They would attach to the metal bed frame. One would be on the wrist, one on the arm, chest restraints just above the elbow, ankles just above the knee. And these are big, thick buckles and locks. We stepped back, sort of in relief, of just, oh, thank God, the hard part is done here. The person was, of course, continuing to thrash and speak in tongues. And at one point, I do not know how it happened, but we all saw it. She appeared to rise about 2 or 3 inches off the bed across the whole body. I remember looking at the psychic assistant next to me. We both just go. I can't explain it. When you were confronted with Satan-obsessed people, you had to be afraid, is my grip on reality that tenuous too? We see this as just a clinical psychological thing. You're crazy. Yeah, and if you're wrong, you know, I mean, anybody who doesn't posit that whatever their worldview is could be completely and utterly wrong, well, you're not much better than a psychotic person because they're completely convinced that the way they see the world is not insane. So you're just mimicking them unless you can at least let in that you don't know what's going on.
Scary, right? A little scary. Don't worry. Well, actually, you should worry. Because I got one more story that you need to hear.
It was a cold night, and my wife asked me to go upstairs to get a pair of socks out of my son's room. It was a dark room. There was a nightlight on. As soon as I walked in, I felt like there was a presence or a person standing behind me. So instinctively, my shoulders went up, and I turned around quickly, but there was nothing there. I'd never felt something like this before, and the only way I can describe it as if someone had an electric glove and was rubbing the length of my back, and I had this surge of strange, for better lack of a better word, electrical shock kind of going through my body. And when it was done, I left the room, walked downstairs, and would have forgotten about the experience had it not happened the next day, and then the day after that, and then the following day. There were strange noises started happening in the house. We had an electrical anomalies happening. There were chills in places where there shouldn't have been chills. I was resistant to the idea that something supernatural could be happening. And then something started happening with my son's toys, those ones that are battery operated. And in the middle of the night, these cars would just turn on. One night, my wife and I are sitting in the living room, and there's a Frosty the Snowman doll in the middle of the room, just sitting there. My son's asleep. And out of nowhere, the thing starts singing the Frosty the Snowman song.
Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale they say. He was made of snow, but the children know how he came to life one day.
I'm unnerved. I thought maybe this is just my imagination. Maybe it's just stress, you know? Maybe I was sick. It took me about a year of event stacking on top of event before I finally just gave myself over to the idea that maybe something out of the ordinary, something extraordinary, something supernatural was happening in the house. So I reached out to an expert, Marianne Winkowski. She's able to do readings, or she's able to tell just over the phone whether or not your house is haunted. I had mixed feelings about calling Marianne Winkowski, only because it seemed that I was going a bit over the edge. I thought she was going to be perfectly honest, I thought she was going to be cuckoo. She knew nothing about me. She did not know the story. I did not give her any information. But she began to be really precise on the layout of the house. Is this happening in your son's room? Well, yes, it was happening in my son's room. She asked if the room where the things were happening was yellow. Yes, it was a yellow room. That started to give me a little bit of a chill. And then she said, you have a young man who just is in the house for about a year. And I could feel, as she's talking to me, I could feel that sensation go through my body. And she says, Gary, he's right on top of you right now. Well, it freaked me out. Well, she said that he wasn't very happy with me. And she kept asking about the name Merrick. I didn't know anybody named Merrick, so it wasn't anybody I knew. But there was a faint memory where that word, that name, had importance. Within time, I realized that there may have been a connection to this man, which I would never, never in a million years would have imagined. There's a very familiar article about a young man, not named Merrick, but a young man named Peter Smith, who was from Merrick. Merrick was a neighboring town, who died in March of 2007 from a severe car accident. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that I had actually read that article when it had happened back in March of 2007. The experience began in our house the day I read that article, because I had done something that I normally don't do, having read that article. From the article, it seemed that he'd been irresponsible and was racing around and ended up killing himself. And injuring someone else and almost killing that person. And I remember just calling out loud, what the hell were you thinking, you idiot? And I was berating this man, who I had never met before, I was just had read in an article, who had just died. And after thinking about that, I began to connect these dots. Did my response to this man, my vitriol, did he somehow hear it? It sounds so silly, but I think I surrendered myself to the possibility that these coincidences that were occurring had some kind of meaning to them. I didn't really feel frightened. I felt sad. I felt sad about my reaction to him. I felt sad for what had happened to him in life. All that being said, I did not want Peter Smith or the ghost in the house. Eventually, Marianne was able to direct me in a way to get the spirits to move on to a funeral home. If there was a funeral going on, what you could do is then push the spirit to that funeral, and that opening to the next world would be there. And it just happened that I lived across the street from a funeral home, Mackin Mortuary. So one day I'm walking home from work, and I see that the funeral home actually has people coming in and out of it. I ran home, busted into the house, and said, "Come this way," walked them to that door. And as I turned to walk away, the front door of the funeral home opened. There was a man there that said, "Hey, can I help you?" And it was one of the funeral directors. I think I replied that, "Yeah, I just wanted to see if you're open." And they said, yes, we are. And I went, "Good, okay." So I went home afterwards and told my wife what I had done. And we went to bed. And the strangest thing happened the next day. When we woke up, the house was quiet. There was a change in the house. And it was as if there had been a white noise machine on in our house for we don't know how long, and that someone had turned it off. It was a welcome silence. It was a silence of peace.
Right now, this is my fourth and final piece of advice. If your toys ever tell you to leave, listen to your toys. I'd like to thank Gary Jansen for telling us that story. Y'all can link to Gary's book on our website, snapjudgment.org. Now, that's all the story for tonight. Because y'all got to go to bed while the adults enjoy some more liquid refreshment. Don't worry, I'm taking y'all for a snipe hunt tomorrow. You know Snap Judgment's on Facebook, Snap Judgment on Twitter, Snap Judgment, but don't be tweeting in these woods. More stories. I got all the stories you need, baby. Movies, pictures, stuff, it's all at snapjudgment.org. But the bad news, you little bitty kids can't come to the big Snap Judgment live show. August 1st and 2nd in San Francisco. Everybody else, they can get tickets right now at snapjudgment.org. We're filming a television special, and you little hoodlums like to break stuff. So y'all stay home, but it's going to be off the hook. Tickets at snapjudgment.org. And you know, I didn't tell these stories by myself. I looked into the fire for help. Look with me. Look. Do you see him? Right there. That's the Uber Undertaker. That's Mark Ristich. He gives time to a beating heart. Pat and CeeDee Miller. Julie DeWitt is sometimes not there. There. Anna Sussman talks to dead people. Nancy Lopez cannot burn. Joe Rosenberg won't drink holy water. Baby Kim talks to shadows. Jasmine Aguilera knows your future. Eliza Smith, Anna Allerstein, and Leon Morimoto are sands in an hourglass. The Will of Bina. Will has an unfinished basement. Now, did you ever see someone with no mouth, no nose, no eyes walking down the street patting kids on the head? Let me know. Because that's the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and they owe me money. PRX,
the Public Radio Exchange will exchange you one public radio for the small price of your eternal soul. PRX.org. WBEZ in Chicago is where they film Ghostbusters. Who you gonna call? And you know Uncle Glenn is as far from the news as it is possible to be. You could climb a tree. That one right there. Go ahead, climb it. Bring your flashlight. Climb to the very top. Yup. Now look to that branch on your right. Uh-huh. Now ask yourself, why is there an eye growing out of the tree? And why is it looking at you right now? Ha! You're scared, ain't you? You're scared, but that still is not as far away from the news as this is. But this is NPR.